Yesterday we spoke about the purity of devotional service. Who can begin devotional service? Who is eligible for devotional service? So, can I ask you to please divide into your groups, as we had many, four groups, I think, or five groups, and then those people who were preparing to do the summary and do the overview of yesterday's and maybe the day before yesterday's class. Okay? So, please break into groups and give a summary to each other. And just a short summary, 5 minutes, and the rest please give feedback. And two groups can use flip charts, some others, maybe even more, there are flip charts there, you can use there if you want to present. Flip chart, blackboard, whoever is doing a summary can use the blackboard. It's better if you do. It's best because then it's easier to remember for others. Okay? Hare Krishna. Thank you. Let's go back. Regarding these everyday summaries, I wanted to tell one more thing. Please make them as a kind of a mini lecture or mini class. Try to make it better than I did the previous day. Okay? Try to make it in a as impressive or as memorable form as you can. You can use, if you're using a computer, you can make a PowerPoint presentation, or you could I think it's booming very much. Or you can use blackboard, flip charts, and so forth. Okay? Just so that you not only review, but also learn to present things. Okay? All right. Thank you.
Mr. Prabhu, you need to say that after every two chapters, we should prepare a summary after
every day. So, for tomorrow, please decide who of each group does the next presentation. Yes? Who does the next presentation tomorrow on today's topics? All right. Also, I wanted to say that I spoke to Ahindra Prabhu the other day, and I asked him if he would like to come and do a presentation on Raganuga Bhakti. So he looked interested, and he said he will think about it. So it seems there is a pretty good chance that he can come and do the presentation on Ragatmika. Well, whenever we have the Ragatmika or the Raganuga, I think on Ragatmika. There is a mis-editing in the book because there it says Raganuga everywhere. But the eternal devotees of Krishna, they are Ragatmikas, not Raganugas. Yeah? Raganuga are the followers of Ragatmikas. So Ragatmika is what's there in eternal Goloka Vrindavan, and Raganuga are those who are Anugas, who are followers. So he may come either on Ragatmika or Raganuga Park, we'll see what he can do. I think it's possible. I think that's his topic anyway. He likes to speak about these things. Okay. All right. So, who is eligible for bhakti?
You know, I'm sure it's going to be very ready to stay back because this class is going to eventually go on. You know,
we better do what?
We better be ready to stay back.
Oh, yes.
On that occasion. Well,
you see, that'll be around probably around 4:30 or so. So he will either have to cancel his evening kirtan and speak here, or he will have to go to the evening kirtan. So then he can see. Let's see what he can do. So who is eligible for bhakti?
Everyone.
Everyone, right. So, one needs to have faith, and everyone can do, regardless of one's qualification. The only thing that's required is Shraddha, as Prabhupada says, some attraction. And, you know, it can mean some interest, just some interest in devotional service. And one can begin. Whereas for every other process, one requires a very high qualification. Even for karma yoga, there is some significant qualification required. All right. Then varnashram, we discussed varnashram. Is varnashram necessary for bhakti, for devotional service?
No.
Is varnashram helpful for devotional service?
Yes.
Yes, okay, very good. So because many people are confused, they think that if it's not necessary, then it should be completely rejected. Right? Or if it's helpful, then it means it's necessary. Right? But it's not necessary, but it's very helpful. And Prabhupada wanted, and you see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and everywhere we see that it's glorified. Half of the more than half of the Bhagavatam describes Varnashram Dharma. Right? So, Gita describes Varnashram Dharma. And Varnashram Dharma doesn't mean simply Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Shudra. It means basically the social rules, in a broad meaning for us. So in order to perform bhakti, we need some purity in the mind, we need to support the body, we need some sane social interactions, right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that's why, as long as we are in the body, we need some some varnashram as a support for devotional service, for bhakti. But it's not necessary, it's not a must in its full form. So today we will speak about the elements of bhakti. The chapter 6 is called How to Discharge Devotional Service. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yes.
Is there a question that you were just saying that varnashram can be supported, but it's not necessary?
Right.
So, what do we say then for someone who has no ashram? Is it possible for someone to say, I don't think I need varnashram, it's not necessary, so I won't be in an ashram?
Right.
Which has come up because, you know, there's a lot of the fifth ashram men around these days.
Yes. Right. So, if the question is, can one advance without varnashram? The answer is yes, one can advance without varnashram. If you ask if varnashram helps and makes advancement faster, then the answer is also yes, varnashram helps and makes it faster. And especially for some, for something like counseling or leading others, then if a person is not established in any ashram, it makes his position not steady to lead, and it puts the person in a dangerous position. If he's not established, you know, it may lead to some misuse or some problems in relationships. So therefore, such a person is not encouraged to become a counselor. So varnashram, again, if you take it as a complete system with four varnas and four ashrams, maybe it's difficult to fully implement it presently. At least four ashrams we have, but also we do them in a little funny way, yes. We do, person joins as a grihastha, then he becomes a brahmachari, then he becomes again a grihastha, then he becomes a vanaprastha, sometimes even sannyasi, then again a grihastha. So it's not exactly what it used to be, right? But at least, okay, four ashrams is, four ashrams are there, but Varanasi is more difficult. But still, everybody has to follow some social rules. As far as, like, for example, association with the opposite sex, right? Marriage, these things. So these are basically what we call with a broad name of Varanasi. If we neglect it, and we have groups that neglect it, then it just leads to promiscuity and sinful life. Right? As we mentioned, the most sacred place in the universe, right? And there's a large portion of elevated residents there who have this trouble because their philosophy is rejecting Varanasram altogether. It's their philosophy, it's their principle number one. Yeah? No regard for Varanasram. And we see what it leads to. We don't see, but people who go there, they can see. Who live there, they told me. And also you can see when Prabhupada, he was criticizing the Gopi Bhava Club that was created in Los Angeles. Yeah? You can see Gopi Bhava Club was the club that was focusing on Srila Prabhupada's books, but only on the topics with regards to gopis. Right? So when Srila Prabhupada learned about it, he became very angry. Yes? He stopped them. And when he criticized them, when he described their faults, then he said, if they want to hear about pastimes of Radha and Krishna, that's okay. But why do the boys make the girls pregnant? Right? Why do the boys make the girls pregnant? Without any marriage or anything. So it means that they are not on the level. And even though they discuss the affairs between gopis and Krishna, it only stimulates their material desires. That's, you know, the sweetness, the madhurya, but material. Right? And they go down to things that are considered nasty even from the material point of view. So therefore there is a certain qualification for Raganuga practice or Raganuga sadhana, and we'll be covering this further. And besides that, that's why we need Varanasram or some social rules to keep us pure, to keep us on track, so that until we develop the spontaneous, until we develop the strong taste and attachment, strong taste and attraction, until that time, we remain pure. Right? From that time, it will be enough to just, you know, think about Krishna. But until then, we need some guidelines to keep us on track.
Without wanting to hold up the class, does that mean if somebody is not wanting to wear saffron, we should tell them you should get married and encourage them to choose a wife, right? Rather than just what seems to be the case, at least in the West now. But that's normal, and Brahmacharya is very strange. And marriage is, I mean, in the early days, arranged marriages.
Yes.
In the West, you know, the temple president said, you want to get married, okay, here's the wife, sit at the yajna. There's many couples I know that have never met the husband before the yajna, or maybe met once. So,
yes.
So, you know, I mean,
Are bachelors, allowed, right?
Yeah, it seems so.
Well, bachelors are allowed for some time. But bachelor daddies are not allowed. So, in other words, Srila Prabhupada made it in such a way that everybody who joined the temple, unmarried, they would wear saffron. You know? Traditionally, it seems that now we are getting more to the more traditional system, where saffron is for those who are aiming at lifelong celibacy, who would like to stay unmarried till the end of life. Right? So, in other words, if a person does want to get married, then he stays in the Brahmacharya Ashram, he lives there, he gets initiation and so forth, he does service, but he wears white. That's what we have in Niranjan Maharaja's zone, in some different places. It's in many places we have. In Bombay, I think we have something similar. And then there is a period of education or training in Brahmacharya, in the Brahmacharya Ashram. And it may go for, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years. It's all right, he stays in the ashram. Sometimes the person may already decide to move on, but, you know, to to build a palace for his new queen, he needs some bricks. Bricks he needs to buy with something, so he needs to earn money, right? So therefore, maybe he'll start working, you know, 1, 2, 3 years before he gets something together. But he should get married. He should be encouraged to get married and not hang around as some strange bachelor. Become responsible, take responsibility. So usually you can see that the temples will encourage these people to get fixed, to get established, either as a renunciate or as a married person. Okay? Alright, so after this hot topic of marriage in ashrams and varnashram, we will go next. This is again, don't be swayed. We are supposed to develop brahminical qualities. So therefore, it means we should be broad-minded. Brahmana means broad-minded. Yes, it means one who is kind, tolerant, and he one who can understand different points of view. In order to convince somebody, you also have to understand the opposite point of view. Right? So that's why we have to understand both all the arguments for and against, pro and contra. So you will see there will be people who will be completely against. As in every society, there will be, you know, ultra-right, ultra-left, you know, radicals, and center, you know, like in every political horizon. So you will see people who will say, damn Varnashram, forget about Varnashram, just chant. There will be others who will say, how can you chant if you are not situated properly? Right? So don't become inflamed by these different opinions. Even the person I spoke recently that we want to invite, he's saying, don't think about Varnashram. Right? He's saying, forget about Varnashram. So we can respect different positions, and we need in our society different points of view. Those who present this point of view and those who present the other point of view. But it's best if we know, if we have a balanced position based on nectar of devotion, based on Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and understand clearly why is what is required and why it is required. Not just have the conclusions. Right? We would like to become Uttama Adhikaris, meaning that we not only know the conclusions, but we understand why these conclusions are there. Uttama Adhikari doesn't mean that we are Uttama Bhagavatam. Uttama Adhikari means that we are good candidates for practicing pure devotional service. It means we understand what we do, and we understand also why we do this. Right? So that's why we can also understand why these extreme opinions exist. Because Varnashram is not necessary, right? But it is helpful. So you can see how it can be taken to two extremes, arguing that against and that for. Okay, let's move forward. So today we hear about how to discharge devotional service. There are 64 principles mentioned. Srila Prabhupada says here, Srila Rupa Goswami states that his elder brother, Sanatana Goswami, has compiled Hari Bhakti Vilas. Now we used to have Kushakatha Prabhu's translation, but not complete. Now we have a complete translation, but not very reliable, not very precise. But anyway, we have something. So Sanatana Goswami compiled Hari Bhakti Vilas for the guidance of the Vaishnavas, and therein he mentioned many rules and regulations to be followed by the Vaishnavas. Rupa Goswami says Lakshani. Lakshani means lakhs and lakhs. Lakhs and lakhs of rules, so hundreds of thousands of rules and regulations. So actually we don't have 64 rules, we have hundreds of thousands and hundreds of thousands of rules and regulations. However, Rupa Goswami will list 64 main rules or principles of bhakti. And out of these, there are some simple rules which are just as they are, you know, just consisting of one act, like, I don't know, smelling a flower, yes, or drinking charanamrita or whatever, and there will be, or becoming, well, okay, so residing in a sacred place. And there will be some principles which consist of many subsidiary principles, like kirtan, can be lila kirtan, guna kirtan, rupa kirtan, nama kirtan, right? Or archana. Archana has so many divisions. You are studying deity worship. There are so many sub-rules, subsets. So there are principles and details. So there are hundreds of thousands of rules mentioned in Hari Bhakti Vilas. And then Prabhupada says, some of them are very important and prominent. And Srila Rupa Goswami will now mention these very important items for our benefit. It's for our benefit, not to tax our brains, not to test our tolerance. The purport of this statement is that Srila Rupa Goswami proposes to mention only basic principles, not details. For example, a basic principle is that one has to accept a spiritual master. Exactly how one follows the instructions of his spiritual master is considered a detail. For example, if one is following the instruction of his spiritual master and that instruction is different from the instructions of another spiritual master, this is called detailed information. But the basic principle of acceptance of a spiritual master is good everywhere, although the details may be different. Srila Rupa Goswami does not wish to enter into details here, but wants to place before us only the principles. So, for example, can you please give me an example of a principle, and as opposed to a detail? Good, okay. Chanting Hare Krishna. So chanting Hare Krishna is a principle that we all have to follow. What would be the detail?
How many rounds? 16 or 64?
Yes, how many rounds? 16 or 64?
In the morning or not?
In the morning or in the afternoon?
At 10 or not at 10?
Well, that's already... going to... We should... It's a matter of principle to try to avoid the fences. It's very dangerous to not even try to avoid. So, this is an important point. There are principles, and we have to learn the principles. For example, chanting. Right? And we have to learn to agree on principles. We can see that there are so many arguments over details. The sign of intelligence is that we know how to determine the priorities. What is the more important, what is less important. Yes. A neophyte cannot determine sometimes what is most important, what is less important. What is best, what is second best. And therefore there are arguments. As neophytes we often argue, you have to do like this. And he says, no, you have to do like that. Or that is not important. As Prabhupada mentions in Ishupanishad, it's customary for the neophyte, for Kanishtas, to argue between themselves. So we have to learn to agree on principles, to find the principles and agree on them. And then details. We have to see what's a detail. And for example, it can be 16 rounds. Or 40, or 64, or 192, as Haridas Thakur was chanting. Yes. When Haridas Thakur couldn't chant 192 rounds anymore, he decided to die. So for different people, there are different numbers. So this is a very important thing that Prabhupada mentions. There are principles and there are details. The principle is to accept the spiritual master. The detail is which spiritual master do we accept, and how do we follow his instructions? Do we live with him and travel with him, or do we live at home and take instructions, you know, once every while when we meet him, or do we get instructions from the book? So these are already details. Is it clear? So there are principles and details. It's important to understand that there are both things. Sometimes we think that everything is a principle. Right? Okay, so now we are going to the 64 principles. Out of them, There are 20 in the beginning, and Rupa Goswami says that we should definitely follow the 20 in the beginning and the 5 at the end, everybody. 20 first and the 5 most important, most powerful elements that are mentioned in the end. So, Prabhupada gives a very beautiful description here. I don't know if we shall read the whole thing. Let's at least start. So let's, every one of us, read one principle very loudly. Okay? So we can begin from Vijay Venkatesh, yes? Okay. Yeah, just one principle, very loudly.
Accepting the chaitra of the lotus feet of your monarch is spiritual master.
Very good.
Becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him.
Radhika Nagarbham.
Obeying orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion.
Dina Pavanamitai.
Following in the footsteps of great authors under the direction of the spiritual master.
Naika Shingabhu.
Inquiring from the spiritual master how they are learning
Being prepared to give up anything material for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Lord Sri Krishna. It means that when we are engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, we must be prepared to give up something which we do not like to give up. And also, we have to accept something which we do not like to accept.
Thank you.
Residing in the sacred place or treatment like Gaurav Gurudev.
Accepting only what is necessary or dealing with the material world only as far as necessary.
Observing the fasting day on Ekadasi. Washing
is sacred.
Sacred. It treats like the banyan tree.
Thank you.
Have to rigidly give up the company of non-devotees.
One should not instruct a person who is not desirous of accepting devotional service.
One should not be very enthusiastic about constructing costly temples or monasteries.
One should not try to read too many books, nor should one develop the idea of earning his livelihood by lecturing or professionally reciting Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita.
One should not be regretful in ordinary views.
One should not be under the spell of many places in the world or jubilation in vain.
One should not disrespect the demigods.
One should not be unnecessarily abhorrent to any living entity.
One should carefully avoid the various offenses in chanting the holy name of the Lord or in worshipping the deity in the temple.
One should be very indulgent towards the
Okay, thank you. Prabhupada says, without following the above mentioned 10 principles, one cannot properly elevate himself to the platform of sadhana bhakti or devotional service in practice. So does it mean that this is sadhana bhakti or not? Preliminary activities, they are the door. Rupa Goswami calls them dvarani. He calls these 20 principles the door to devotional service. So what we want is devotional service. Because you can see, there is some devotional service there, like residing in Vrindavan, asking questions from the spiritual master, following in the footsteps. But many of these things are not directly bhakti, you know, like avoiding like ahimsa or not reading too many books. This is not in itself bhakti, right? Or accepting only what is necessary, being satisfied with the minimum. So these things, they are the door, according to Rupa Goswami, the door to bhakti, or as Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentions in Nectar of Instruction, the first two verses also don't touch on bhakti in Nectar of Instruction. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says they are the steps to the temple of bhakti. And surrender itself, surrendering in itself is also not bhakti yet. Surrendering is just this saropa divinir muktam. Surrendering means anyabhilashita shunyam, right? That's surrendering. So it prepares us for bhakti. It's the steps to the temple of bhakti. But it's very important, because without entering the door of bhakti, we will not enter the temple of bhakti. So therefore, these 20 are very important. Altogether, Srila Rupa Goswami mentions 20 items, and all of them are very important. Out of the 20, the first three, namely accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, taking initiation from him, and serving him with respect and reverence, are the most important. So which are the most important? Accepting guru, initiation, and taking instructions. Yes. Okay. Serving with respect and reverence. Okay, is it clear? Any questions here? Yes, Radhika.
Why is it so important, the worship of the sacred trees, like the banyan tree, whenever it's not practiced?
Yeah, the book itself, it says, worship Tulasi, Banyan, Cows, Ashvatha, Vaishnavas, and Brahmanas. Yes. So in other words, basically what it means, respect the tadiyam, whatever is connected to the word. And Krishna is go brahmana hitayacha, he respects the brahmanas. So therefore devotee has to respect brahmanas and the cows. Devotee serves the cows. The cow is served by feeding the cow, by scratching the, how do you call it in it? Well, it's not really a throat. Well, this throat, the neck. Yes, thank you. The neck of the cow. Yeah, cows, like sometimes from the west, we don't know where to scratch. We think that we have to scratch somewhere in the back. But the cows, like sometimes they even come to you. Yeah, they come and give you the throat, the neck. You know, scratch me here, and circumambulating. Krishna is very pleased, as Bhagavan Maharaj saying that. Saying that if we want to be dear to Krishna, then we have to become either a brahmana or a cow. So, and probably it's more practical to become a brahmana than to become a cow. So these are elements. These are all things that and persons which are connected to Krishna, and therefore a devotee is respectful. In other words, it teaches a devotee to be respectful at all times. Because sometimes you can see that a devotee may think that he has to respect Krishna only in the temple. Or he has to respect Vaishnava only if the Vaishnava sits on the Vyasasana. Right? But a devotee has to respect Krishna in everybody's heart. So, we can come back to... any questions? Any more questions on this? Is it clear? Yes, Ilan. Right, it is nice, and we certainly construct temples, and Srila Prabhupada certainly was very enthusiastic about opening temples and constructing temples. Oftentimes, it attracts people, if there is a nice, beautiful temple, and people take Krishna consciousness more seriously. But at the same time, we have situations in our movement where we have a temple, or where for years we were taking care of the bricks, but not of the people. Not of devotees. Or where we have the temple, but nobody to serve the deities there. So therefore, it may overshadow, again, it may overshadow the true essence of bhakti, that we have to speak about Krishna, hear about Krishna, serve Krishna, and the temple is to help that, and not otherwise. Okay? Yes?
In terms of only this first part, I'm a little confused that one should not try to read too many books. Now, for us, we are asked to read Srila Prabhupada's books. and not the other books, like, you know, commentaries given and all that. So, is it something like, you know, that if you try to read too much of books, you will get too much of ahankar, that I am a jnani, and then you will forget the goal of life. That is why Vaishnava philosophy is restricted us to read too many books.
Yes, it's actually taken from the seventh canto as a rule for sannyasi, for sannyasis. It means that we have to not read for the sake of reading. We have to read to get the knowledge, to get the wisdom. Right? That's why we should read. So in other words, we read not to boast afterwards, oh, I have read this book. Did you read that philosopher? Oh, you know, this philosopher says so and so. So just, again, as you're saying, it boosts ahankar. Right? And sometimes, if you don't have enough intelligence, there will be so many contradictions in our minds. Because you can see one acharya, like you see, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says in 12.12 that this Shriyohi Jnanam Avyasat Jnanam Dhyanam Ishishite Dhyanat Karma Palatyaka Jagachanti Ramanantaram. He translates in a specific way. He says that that knowledge is better than karma and dhyana is better than knowledge, and then the second line is very confusing in the Bhagavad Gita because it says that again, renouncing fruits is better than meditation. How is this? So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that this ablative case from that dhyanat doesn't mean than that. It means that from meditation comes detachment from all the fruits. So he gives this explanation. Yeah. He translates this case differently in different lines. He says it's not better than, it's coming from. And he says there can be no other explanation. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Baladeva Vidyabhushan, his disciple, a few years later, comes and gives completely different explanation. He's saying that these are two yoga ladders put on top of each other. One is without bhakti, and the second line speaks about with bhakti. So karma yoga in the school of bhakti is better than dhyana outside of bhakti, without bhakti. So he gives a completely different explanation. His guru says there can be no other explanation. The disciple comes and gives a different explanation. So if we are not enough intelligent, not broad-minded, so to say, if we don't have brahminical qualities, we'll be confused. We'll think, how is this? His guru said like that, and there can be no other explanation, and his disciple is coming and giving another explanation. So sometimes we can see contradictions and we can become confused, can make offenses, can think bad of, you know, Baladeva Vidyabhushan or some acharyas, or we can think that the acharyas actually, or we can even have doubts in Krishna. Yet, how is this in his shastra? In one place it says one way, the other place it says another way, or one acharya says this, the other acharya says that. Yeah? So we can even get doubts and diminish our faith. So this is the danger of reading too many books, especially from different sources. So that's why it's better to first study Prabhupada's books, and I think there is enough for, you know, to last some while, quite some while. And then after you've studied Prabhupada's books, okay, then you can add some commentaries to go deeper. You will be fixed in Prabhupada's philosophy, in Prabhupada's school of thought, teachings, and you will understand the principles, therefore you will not be confused by the differing details. And that's why we are studying Bhakti Shastri, so that we can get the principles very clear. And details, that's Prabhupada's modern mission. Yes, Prabhupada not only presented the principles, but he gave a very nice, in a very nice personal mood. And his mission was to start this movement. And as Prabhupada presents it, you can see that people can practice it all over the world. But as, you know, some big acharyas are presenting it, you can see devotees even in Vrindavan, they try to practice, you know, this meditation on Radhakun and all this. They practice this meditation for 1-2 years and they fail. They cannot. Even here, even living here, even quite serious devotees. What to say about going there and, you know, living in the West and practicing all of this. Although the principle is the same, remembering Krishna. It's the same sadhana. So Prabhupada gives not only the correct principles, but the ideal detail for the present day and age and the society. Right.
Could you explain this a little bit more? Because sometimes we hear blasphemy, right? Like, I've been
just give you an example, and let this body map the body in the states. And yes, that morning I had a lecture by the Maharaj Shakyamala. So I was kind of discussing with him. I was telling the boy that I just came up, and he was really, really blasphemous. So, what is it? What do you have in a reaction by just listening? If I'm not accepting it, I'm not accepting it at all. But just by listening, I'm getting contaminated.
It can be, yes, we can get very contaminated. I have sometimes if a person is able to see, if the person is very fixed, the person very clearly knows what is there. And if the person sees very clearly why that person says what he says, right, then person may avoid becoming totally contaminated or too contaminated. But no, just like one of my friends who did go over to Radhakund to got reinitiated there and so forth. He said, that's how he said. He said, I was going around too much and I listened too many offenses. And I listened so many offenses that my faith died. I lost all my faith. I had no faith at all. So therefore, he says, there they gave me some faith, so that's why I joined, and then now I'm thinking that this was a mistake and this was my fault. Because I didn't care to avoid hearing offenses. That's what the person said. So it is quite dangerous to hear. So best is not only from Gaudiya Math or Babaji's or from this. Even within ISKCON, we can hear so much criticism. So we have to see. You see also. There is one interesting phenomenon we have which is that in order to reject material society, sometimes one has to be a little bit of a rebel. One rebels, right? So we attract quite a few rebels, and in that part it is good because they were able to step out of the conditioned routine of the material life. But there is another part that by nature oftentimes they are rebels. They like to rebel. It's their nature. And there's a type of people, quite large amount of people are like that. And this nature sometimes continues. And after some time they stay in a nice society, but still they have a need to vent this desire to rebel. So now they find something else to rebel against. And certainly, we are in the material world. We are composed. Our society is composed of the same people that are outside. Right? So therefore, naturally, we have so many faults. It's only natural, and we can find so many faults. So then, these people they try to rebel against devotees already. So now, this tendency, which was good at some point, becomes dangerous at this point. So therefore, we can have many people in around us who like to criticize. There are some people who feel so much taste to criticism. Well, it's a material tendency. All of us, you know, like to. As soon as I hear, you know, did you hear that such and such did this and this? Immediately, my mom says, yes, tell me, yes. What was that? We are looking for dirt, right? That's material mind. We like to have reasons to not respect others. So therefore, even in ISKCON, you may have people who are criticizing. So it's important to be able to avoid such topics. Just, you know, being, Prabhupada says in the first canto, he calls Parikshit a realist. And he says a realist is somebody who looks at the positive side of everything. That's a realist. Parikshit saw a good quality in Kali Yuga, and he spared his life. Because in Kali Yuga you can you get a reward even for a mental good activity. So, being a realist is accepting that this world is full of dirt. So, if we find something, some faults, it's natural. It's nothing to speak about. That's what this world is. Kaler dosha nidherajan. This is an ocean of faults. There's nothing special about it. What is there to speak? And if we expect, if we understand that there will be so many faults around, then we will not be, you know, surprised. But if we find something good, this is something to be surprised. As I tell one friend who always is disturbed by this fault, that fault, so many faults. So I'm telling him that you are incurable optimist. You're not a pessimist, you're an incurable optimist, because you always want better. You expect that it will be so much better. Right? And therefore you always see that this is not up to snuff, this is not up to the mark, this is not good enough. So it means you demand, you expect much more. Right? But if I have no expectations, just like one lecturer, he once asked, if you do something good to another person, what can you expect from this person? Please tell me. What would you answer? If you did something good to another person,
good.
What would you expect? Good. That he will accept. So how would the person? Nothing. So somebody said, nothing. We expect nothing. So he said, oh, you are an optimist. You're an optimist, because sometimes you do good to a person, or not only sometimes, quite a few instances, and they reply with something bad. They criticize you, or they demand more, or they blame you for not giving more, or not giving again. So he says that this is the economy of relationships. If we expect good, we will suffer. Even if we expect nothing, we will suffer. Only if we expect bad, then if he replies with bad, then that's what we expected, right? And if he did nothing, we are happy. And if he did something good, oh, this is a surprise. A very pleasant surprise, right? So this is same with this world. If we expect that, you know, I should be in heaven, then I'll suffer like hell. Because, you know, in Mahabharata, Ganguly's translation, when Yaksha asks Yudhishthir Maharaj, what is pride? What is pride? Then Yudhishthir Maharaj says, pride is to think that I am suffering. It's very interesting, right? Because it means, if I think I am suffering, it means I proudly think that I deserve better. I deserve much better, right? But I have not gotten it, so that's why I am suffering. So in the same way, I think that I deserve a better temple president, I deserve better neighbors, I deserve better bhakta leader, I deserve a better roommate, I deserve a better this and that, and it's not up to the mark, so I'm criticizing. Yeah? So it shows an incurable optimism or desire or pretension or thinking that they should be so nice. But if we understand that, you know, I am who I am with my bad karma, and this is material world, Kali Yuga, earth, so therefore it will be full of dirt, full of faults, full of defects. And it's normal. That's what it is. So then there will be nothing to criticize, and we'll just, as soon as we see something at least neutral, we'll be happy, and if it's something good, we'll be very happy. Yes?
How can you put yourself in the hands of someone else, you know, to direct you?
Right. Yeah, it doesn't mean we should become fools. It doesn't mean that we become foolish, right? We see that, you know, if there is a fault, we see that. We don't become blind. And if somebody is, and especially if it's our duty to correct somebody, we correct, right? And if it's not our duty, but somebody is doing a big mistake, then maybe we respectfully inform the higher authorities of this person. That this person...
Would you do that, and is establishment there, you just don't get anything back, and then you lose faith, you know? Then what do you do?
Well, again, it means that you expected immediate change.
I agree with your principle.
So we can see, if this is a defect that is tolerable, you know, there is some defect, but things can go on, and I just have to learn to tolerate this defect. Or if this is a defect that is intolerable, and I can change something, so what can I do? In other words, at all circumstances, we see what can I do. And basically, the most important thing, as Madhavananda very nicely he writes very beautiful, he composes very beautiful magazines. He says, we have searched the enemy and have found the enemy, and the enemy is us. Right? So the best thing that each one of us can do, the most powerful thing that we can do, is change myself, each one of us. And what will happen? Either people around me will be impressed or inspired, and they will also change. Or because I changed, I will end up in a better situation. Because I have improved, therefore I will get a better better environment for myself. So we have to see, is this something that I can change? If not, can we tolerate it? And if not, then maybe yes, maybe you have to sometimes even move to another place or find some other situation. And we also have to be intelligent.
So the thing is, one is in a management, then he has to discuss many things. And this is at the same point.
Yes.
Then he has to discuss many things and has to decide on things. How should one go very carefully to decide these things?
It means it is your duty then to criticize and find faults, right? But what is very important is to not become attached to this, not identify with this, and not take pleasure in this.
Not identify with this.
And not take pleasure.
I didn't
understand.
Not identify.
Not identify. As a professional fault finder, not to think that yes, I'm an authority, I'm the manager, I must do this, that's how I am, because then we are attached and then we like to criticize. We have to always understand, okay, this is, you know, I don't like this, I don't want to be this, or even if I want to be this, I don't want to be this. Yes, even I have the nature to be like that, still I want to become free from attachments, free from fault seeking. But my guru told me to do this. My authorities told me to do this. So unwillingly, even though it's my nature, unwillingly, I am doing that, and I have to correct you. I have to do these things. But please understand, it's not what I like to do. It's not my... I don't take pleasure in this. Then people will not be offended. And especially for us, it will not be so dangerous. Because the danger is that we identify and become attached to a position and to criticizing and so forth. And then it's very dangerous for our spiritual life. We will have some unpleasant reactions.
How do you understand that we have the right to correct? Like if you're looking after some people...
Duty. Not even a right, but duty. If you don't correct, they will perpetuate their mistake and they will suffer. So it's your duty to correct. If it's some mistake that's within the parameters that you are managing. If somebody, you know, is... can you use intelligence? If somebody is... you're a bhakta leader and your bhakta eats with the left hand, or eating touches without washing hands, he just ate, and then with the same hands he touches somebody else's food or whatever, touches the door or something, and he has contaminated hands, he contaminates everything around. So you tell him, because you're a bhakta leader, he's supposed to learn. If you don't tell him, he will never learn. Right? But again, if this is a guest who has come for the first time in the temple, yes, and you just told him that, you know, you shouldn't eat meat, and that's a big news to him, you don't tell him, you know, that, okay, you have dirty hands, and you don't bother with these smaller things.
Yeah.
One spiritual master said that even though he was a very powerful spiritual master, he said he doesn't correct more than once in a day his disciples. He just gives one correction in a day. Because otherwise it would be difficult for the false ego to take. So you can see what is the, how much they can take. And then again, there has to be love, there has to be desire to see them benefited, happy. Okay, I think you are all tired of me, so why don't we do some more exercises? Okay. So let us all stand up. We start those Tai Chi exercises. In Bhaktisandarbha Jiva Goswami quotes third canto about deity worship. There is this famous verse: Ishvaram sarvabhuteshu santam ishvaram hiparcham bhajate modhyat basmaneva juhotisa, that if somebody worships me as the deity but neglects to respect me in everybody's heart, then his deity worship is like pouring, is like making sacrifice not in the fire but in the ash. This is a famous verse from Kapila Shiksha. So, if somebody is worshipping the deity but neglects me in everybody's heart, then his deity worship is like pouring oblations, offering sacrifice in the ash, in the ashes and not in the fire. So then Jiva Goswami describes, you know, so how important it is to respect every living entity and Krishna in everybody, in every living entity. And he says that for a neophyte it may be important, or for, that's why Shastra teaches us to respect everybody, right? But he says for a devotee, if somebody is a devotee, there is no prescription for him to, there is no separate instruction for him to respect every living entity. So you may think, yes, bhakti is, but then he explains why. It is because a devotee is someone who has Shraddha, and if he has Shraddha, he already knows that Krishna is in everybody's heart, and he already respects Krishna in everybody's heart. So if he has Shraddha, he will already respect Krishna in everybody's heart. That's why for him there is no injunction. So there is no injunction, there is no separate injunction to respect everybody, not because it's not needed, but because it's already coming natural to a devotee. It's an important point. But we'll discuss this more later. So here it's very interesting. You can see in these 20 elements there are many qualities. So even though it says that we do not need to work on qualities, it's not part of bhakti, but we can see that it is part of, these qualities are part of bhakti, like being renounced, not lamenting, being peaceful, right? This is a quality, but this is in the first 20 elements of bhakti as given by Srila Rupa Goswami. So then again, it's the door to bhakti, and it's important. It's, if you already have bhakti, then it will already be your quality. So that's why we have these lists. There are so many lists of qualities in the Bhagavatam, in the Gita, so many lists of qualities, so that we can check ourselves. Am I on the right path? They're like the landmarks. Landmarks, orientire, yes? Landmarks on the way, so that you can see, okay, am I on the correct path? Like if you are going to some place and you're not sure about the way, so they tell you, okay, you will be passing on the way, you will pass some old church, and you will pass some castle like this, and a mountain like this, and then when we see that, we know, oh, I am on the correct way, on the correct, that's the correct route. So in the same way, these qualities are given so that we know. We are not going to these landmarks, but we are passing them. So if we don't have these qualities, if we do not manifest these qualities, if they are not coming, it means maybe we are not practicing something right. Maybe we don't have this Shraddha, which will help us to see, to respect Krishna in everybody's heart. Right? Maybe we don't know who Krishna is. Right? Because if I'm Krishna's devotee, then Krishna, again, it's not some Indian village god. Krishna is absolute truth. Right? He is everything is in Krishna, and Krishna is in everything. So if I actually know who is Krishna, and if I actually respect Krishna and try to serve Krishna, then I will be able to notice him in people's hearts, in everything around me. Right? And I will be very respectful. So that's why we have these qualities, to help us enter the path of bhakti. Alright. Pardon? Again, it's a very good point, because sometimes we think that a quality is something that happens to me. You know, like I eat prasadam, I chant japa, and then one morning I wake up and I look and I say, "Oh look, I became tolerant. Oh look at me, I became peaceful." One morning, but it's not like that. In the Gita, 13th chapter, the 20 elements of jnana, they are called sadhanas. Baladeva Devotion says them. They are 20 sadhanas, 20 practices. So these are practices. If we have them, it will be natural. If we don't have, then we will practice it. That's something we do. Same as brahminical qualities. They are called in this famous Sanat Sujatiya shloka, Mahavrata Dvadasha Brahmanasya. These 12 qualities of a Brahmana, they are called Mahavratas, great vows. So again, it's not something that's happening to you, coming, dropping from the sky, or growing from all the prasadam I have eaten, but it's a vrata, it's a vow. I will act like this. That's how I will act. So they are both. They are qualities, but they are practiced. We practice them. For Krishna's pleasure, not for freedom from suffering, not for liberation. Yes?
I heard a lecture very long back that for eating of these qualities, we are following them in the morning program itself, which means 3/4 of the devotional service we are following in the morning program. Like there was an investigation in Kolhapur, and they counted that how many items.
Yeah.
So 42 of this we are executing them in the morning, like smelling the flowers.
Very nice, yes. So that's why we have the Mangal Arati, right? We have the morning program to to practice most of these elements of bhakti. And then you can see Prabhupada, this point 8 in the second list, third list. Prabhupada says, page 55, a devotee must visit a Vishnu temple at least once or twice every day, morning and evening. In Vrindavan, this system is followed very strictly. All the devotees in town go every morning and evening to visit different temples. Therefore, during these times, there are considerable crowds all over the city. There are about 5,000 temples in Vrindavan city. Of course, it is not possible to visit all the temples, but there are at least 12 very big and important temples which were started by the Goswamis and which should be visited.
So,
pardon?
When are we going to Goswami?
You're asking when?
Yeah, because we initially announced that we
didn't begin. I did announce, but I was there that day in Radha Damodar. So we can so which are the main temples of the Goswamis? Prabhupada mentioned 7 main temples. Govindaji, Madan Mohan, Radha Raman, Radha Damodar, Radha Shyama Sundar, Gopinath, Gokulananda. Yes, 7. Okay, you got 7. It's in Radha Gokulananda. Yeah. So we are very lucky. Prabhupada is a bridge basi, right? So he lived here for a long time. He speaks about these things. So we can, especially now Damodar mass is starting, you can go to Radha Damodar temple in the evening or sometimes in the morning. And It's a nice walk. It's just, you know, 20 minutes to go to get downtown, and then you can visit some of the old temples. And you can go to, you can see the samadhi of Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lokanath Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur. You can feel, you can actually feel the blessings of these great personalities. You can pray to them. We can pray to the deities. There are different temples, and it's a very important part of bhakti, and we are very lucky to be in Vrindavan now. So we can take advantage of this. So who has visited all the seven temples already? Can you please raise your hands? This time, who visited?
Okay.
Yes, so please take advantage of this. Yeah, maybe. But to go as a whole class one, to all seven, it will take maybe, even if you go just two or three people, it will take 3 hours approximately. And with the whole class, it will be longer. Maybe we can, if somebody wants, we can go just a few of us someday. Yeah. Right. And Prabhupada says, one should live in a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dvaraka. Then, 38. In the month of Kartik, October and November, one should make arrangements for special services. In other words, in the month of Kartik, you can see, especially in Vrindavan, everybody is taking some vows. Sorry. There are many different vows. There are, somebody stops eating sweets, takes no sweets. Somebody eats once a day. Somebody eats Ekadashi Prasadam. Somebody chants more rounds. Somebody... Yeah, in the scriptures, these are mentioned in scriptures. There is Kartika Mahatmya, composed by Sanatana Goswami. But there is one vow, there are two vows which are a must for all the Vaishnavas. This is offering a lamp, and chanting the Damodarashtaka. These two vows are a must. And then if you want to know which vow is the most powerful and the most beneficial of all the possible vows in the Kartik month, then you should know that the most powerful, the most beneficial, the highest blessing gives the vow in Kartik month, the vow of hearing Krishna Katha in the assembly of Vaishnavas. This is the best vow. Every day, hear Krishna Katha in the assembly of Vaishnavas. This is the sum and substance. This is the total. This is the goal of all the other vows. Because somebody skips salt, somebody skips that. It's all good, right? But the ultimate goal of all of this is hear Krishna Katha with the Vaishnavas, the devotees. Right, yeah, well, there is, we have Bhagavatam and you have
Bhagavatam class.
Yeah, Bhagavatam class.
And we will, anyways, we are in classes also.
Yes.
Pardon?
Yeah, they will hear Krishna Katha. So you can think, everybody, what vows you can take for Kartik. Maybe if you have a tight schedule, maybe you may not chant more rounds. Like I found that for me, it's more effective not to add more rounds to the amount of rounds that I usually chant, but to, for example, take a vow to at least chant some attentive mantras. Like, for example, every day count 108 attentive mantras. You know, like you chant, but at the same time you try to hear nicely at least one mantra. And then if you could hear it more attentively than usual, then you can count one, then two, then three, and count 108. So I find this is more powerful for me than just chanting more rounds. But if you're chanting 16 rounds, maybe you can add some rounds to your number.
Special
arrangement.
So if someone just buys the person they see, it's not as nice as if somebody really, put all the ingredients together very selectively. So the fact that we can meditate and how we can impress Krishna in that mantra or serve Krishna, I like that.
And then at the end, the last day of Kartik, we are supposed to give gifts, to give charity, and usually it has to be connected with our vows, what we abstained from. In Vrindavan, many people, for the whole Chaturmasya, like Ayindra Prabhu usually, he doesn't even eat grains. He takes only Ekadashi Prasadam, for example. So then on that day he will give the charity of grains to Brahmanas. Well, Ayindra, he makes a huge feast, for hundreds of people, hundreds of devotees. Yeah, also very good feast, right. Okay, so this is our culture. These are elements of bhakti. They invigorate our bhakti. If somehow or other we lose enthusiasm or taste, then festivals and vows and holy places, these are some of the elements which help us re-enliven our taste and enthusiasm. All right. I would like to read a little bit from the next chapter. The first element is accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada says, translates here, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd chapter, verse 21, Prabuddha, one of the Yugandhras, tells Maharaj Nimi, "My dear king, please know for certain that in the material world there is no happiness. It is simply a mistake to think that there is happiness here, because this place is full of nothing but miserable conditions. Any person who is seriously desirous of achieving real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments, and thus be able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. Everyone should try to find such a bona fide spiritual master in order to fulfill his mission of life, which is to transfer himself to the planet of spiritual bliss." So, who knows this verse in Sanskrit? Tasmad gurum prapadyata jigyasu shreya uttamam shabde pare cha nishnatam brahman yupasamasrayam. So, tasmad, therefore. Wherefore? Why? So, therefore, he says that people in this world seek happiness. Therefore, men and women try to unite and become happy, but all they discover is that still they remain unhappy. So therefore, if you want to find the permanent solution to unhappiness, therefore, if you are seeking for Shreya Uttamam, for the ultimate good, which is eternal, therefore, seek the spiritual master, find the spiritual master. And there are three qualifications given. Shabde, pare, cha nishnatam, Brahman Upasamasrayam. He has Brahman Upasamasrayam, means he's pacified his senses by being absorbed in spirit. Right? So in other words, he controls his senses. He can control his senses. He is expert in scripture. Shabda. Shabde Parecha Nishnatam. And he is part of the parampara. He's taking shelter of the Supreme Godhead. So these are the qualifications given in the Bhagavatam, and same given by Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes we see that some people try to, we have different camps trying to attack ISKCON. There are some people coming from the Ritvik camp, trying to cook up some kind of evidence, although there is never any evidence in Srila Prabhupada saying that he will himself initiate. It's actually philosophically has no ground, absolutely. But they basically they say that because some gurus at some point fell down, therefore no other gurus at all times, at all places, should accept any disciples. It doesn't sound very logical, right? It's like it's the same. It's actually very very offensive. If some people were criminal, therefore all the people are criminal. Or if some people in this place or location did something bad, that all people should be punished. It's the so-called collective responsibility, which is not the principle of true justice. Or there is another camp which says that you have to accept spiritual master, but you have to accept the real spiritual master. And who is the real spiritual master is, is somebody who is dancing with Krishna in Rasa Leela, right? And when you hear him, you feel the tickling in your heart, right? And so these people propose some kind of criteria which are impossible to verify, because anybody can say, "Last night I danced with Krishna," right? It's easy to say. And how do you judge if the person has enough power or not? It'll be or somebody say he has the magic eye, So as Hridayananda Maharaj says, it'll turn into a zoo, because then we will try to compete by making a mystic eye, just looking at, mystically at the audience, trying to impress the audience. No, the criteria has to be very clear and verifiable, as given in the Bhagavatam or as given by Rupa Goswami, that the person, he belongs to the parampara, he does not distort the parampara, right? So that's one thing. The other thing is that he is expert in scripture, so he knows the conclusions, he can present the conclusions, right? And that the person can control his senses, is following the regulative principles. As Ramindra Sarup, he once gave a series of lectures which sound like a horror thriller, history of ISKCON. You heard it? Yes? Hidden history, yeah. So he did the analysis, and he's shown that whatever cases were there of fallen gurus, says their problem was not that they were not reading about Rasa Leela or not dancing with Krishna. Their problem was they were not following the basic practices. They were not following the basic four principles or not chanting their 16 rounds. That was their problem. That's from where they went away. So these have to be verifiable and very clear principles, and we have to also be very, very sane and clear-headed about this, because this is it's a complicated topic, because there is magic, or there is a great mystery when a living entity is contacted by Krishna through a spiritual master. It's a great mystery. There is a great magic happening, but at the same time, it's happening through a human being, a particular human being, yes, a human being who is learned in the Shastra, who belongs to the parampara, and who controls his senses by the help of Krishna consciousness, but a human being, right? So two are there. So if we have exaggerated expectations, that because It says, Acharya Mandijaniyam, no guru to be the same as myself, as Krishna says. So, Sakshat Haritvana, he's this Sakshat Hari. So sometimes we have exaggerated expectations. We think that if he is same as Hari, then he must, you know, move a hand and then the thunder rumbles in the sky, or he walks on water, or he, you know, just looks at you and ooh, you feel, you know, bhava bhakti rising in your heart. He has to do some far out things. So these are, again, you know, these exaggerated expectations. We have that. Sometimes they are even fed by other devotees who say, you know, this guru, he made this miracle, that guru, he made that miracle, or my guru, usually it's my guru did this miracle, that miracle, right? And it's okay, miracles can be there, but it's not the basis of our faith. We should not try to, base our faith on miracles. Because again, it's a unverifiable, and it's a flimsy ground. It's a flimsy ground. And if I have such great expectations, then usually what happens, then I see that guru, you know, sneezes, or blows his nose, or, I don't know, has a flu, or has, or, you know, stumbles on a stone on the road. And in other words, shows some normal human traits, some normal human characteristics. Or doesn't know some verse, doesn't remember some verse, or whatever. Which is, you know, absolutely normal. But if I have these super blown up expectations from the spiritual master, then my faith is threatened. I think, oh, what is this? He's not Krishna. Okay? But he is not Krishna, right? He is not Krishna. He is Krishna's representative. And if I accept him based on these verifiable, clear criteria, very straightforward criteria, and if I don't demand from him any of these far-out things, that's when the magic can actually happen. That's when we feel this influence of Krishna acting through the person and helping us through that person. Miracles may be there, maybe yes, maybe no. It depends on the case, depends on the person. But it's not what you can see. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, who can doubt Prabhupada's power? He did something nobody could do. He restarted worldwide Vaishnava movement. Did he show any miracles? He very thoroughly avoided showing any miracles. Some servants here and there or something, they may say, yeah, he did this, he did that, but himself, consciously, for the public, Prabhupada never showed any miracle. That was the point. Because he didn't want cheap miracle seekers. He wanted people who have real faith, people who want Krishna. Otherwise, what would be, you know, otherwise it would be like joining a mafia, you know, just because these are powerful people. This is what all the conditioned souls want. Just to have some powerful group which will protect me, yeah, and will help me materially and in other regards. So we will attract the wrong kind of people. No, we want people who want Krishna. In this verse it says, Tasmat Gurum Prapadita Jigyasu Shayutam. Only those are needed who are asking for the highest benefit. So if you want to know about Krishna, if you want to know about transcendence, then you need a guru. Right? Then actually you can accept guru. But if you are not interested in transcendence, if you're not interested in Krishna, and you just are attracted by a miracle, then it means, you know, you don't need Krishna. And that's why you will be disappointed in your guru, because guru is giving you Krishna. He's giving you the path to Krishna, the way to Krishna. So this is the first point given by Rupa Goswami. Immediately he gives the criteria how to accept the spiritual master. And we can see it is something that oftentimes is a tricky thing in our society. Still we are, sometimes we over-exaggerate who the guru has to be. And because of that, we come to disrespect. Because we expect too much, then we don't find this, and then we disrespect. If we understand that this is it's a devotee, it's a human being. And his divinity is not that he is perfect or has material perfections or something. His divinity in that he transfers very clear and pure message. That's his divinity. If that's what we look for, that's what we expect, then we will have the deepest possible respect. We will respect him as God himself, as Krishna himself. Because we will see how Krishna is acting through him, how Krishna is extending his mercy through this person. It will be undeniable, and we will be overwhelmed with respect. So lack of respect is usually based on these blown up, over-exaggerated demands and expectations, when we want from Guru something that he's not supposed to give. He's not supposed to be giving. Okay, I just wanted to speak about this. Yes?
I want to say, Srila Prabhupada did one miracle. He told himself,
Right. Yes. Yes, that's the miracle that Prabhupada claimed, the only miracle he claimed. And that's the real miracle, right? That's the real miracle, to change, to transform a person. And that's the only miracle that I'm interested in, right? To become transformed. Not if somebody produces gold or reads my mind or does something and it happens. There are so many miracles that can be or it doesn't matter. They are not the essence. Mysteries in a different realm. Okay. Is it clear? Any questions? Comments? Manasi Ganga Mataji.
You know, in this your opinion as a because they talk about this fine and less.
Yes.
Whenever you meet this Bangalore. So I said, you mean you're not ISKCON Bangalore? Because the form of Srila Prabhupada can't be ISKCON. Then you read the final lesson. I went to Bangalore to ISKCON, and they put a huge thing to that. I couldn't read it because I thought I don't want to. So, but what's your thing about this final lesson that they talk about?
If you read it, there is not a shred of evidence, not even a grain of evidence in their favor. People who accept their accept that philosophy, they have to be totally blind philosophically. They have to agree to become philosophically blind and 100% emotional and interested only in their pocket. Basically, this deviation of rejecting guru, basically they reject the need of guru. They say guru is not required. Because, you know, saying that the only guru I need is here on the Vyasa-san, it's good, but he will never chastise me. He will never tell me what I need to do. He will never tell me, you fool, what are you doing? Right? And besides, I don't have to share the collections with him. Right? There's no control over what money I collect. So it's very convenient for this people. So therefore, the reason for accepting this is not philosophical. There is no philosophical reason for accepting that. If you, I don't know if I can find immediately this final lesson, but if you read this final conversation with Srila Prabhupada, it is so clear. It is so clear. Tamal Krishna Maharaj is asking, Satsuru Maharaj, yes. Srila Prabhupada, after you go away, who will initiate? So Prabhupada says, I will appoint some of you, and you will initiate. So then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, somehow, very often he comes up with some funny moments, he says, so this is called Ritvik Acharya. So Ritvik means priest. In Sanskrit, Ritvik means priest. So Prabhupada says, yes. And then he didn't say that they will become my disciples. He just approved, yes, this term, you can call it this term, that term, doesn't matter. But then in that conversation, they ask him, so Prabhupada, whose disciple they will be? So Prabhupada says, they will be his disciple. Prabhupada didn't say, they will be my disciple. They will be his disciple. He will become the guru, they will be grand disciple. How can you suck out of this a theory of Ritvikism is beyond any intelligent person. Beyond any intelligent person who has, you know, at least two classes of education in any school. It's impossible to take out, to convert it into a Ritvik theory. Yeah.
That's what he's doing in the name of
Prabhupada. Yeah.
In Malaysia, we wiped out the Ritvik. That's very good.
Well, maybe there it may be popular in some places because there will always be people who will want to, you know, be somewhat Krishna conscious, but will be adamantly against, you know, having any control over themselves. Who will want to be absolutely independent without any control. So they will find this philosophy or that philosophy, and they will try to play. But philosophically, you know, it's not a philosophy. It's not based on Prabhupada. Prabhupada, throughout, you know, all the time, he says, I want you to become gurus. In 69, he writes to Hamsadutta, I want all of you, he says, I want all of you to become Bhaktivedantas. That's why we are studying, yes. I want that the family diploma of Bhaktivedanta should not be lost. All of you to become Bhaktivedantas. And in a few years, you will initiate your disciples. In a few years. That was 69.
By 1975.
1975, yeah? Right. So, Prabhupada thousands of times said, I want you all to become gurus. And not a single time, anywhere, throughout all the time, ever did he say, I will initiate when I go away. Anyway, it's we just have to understand. There was one ISKCON journal where they examine these, I think it must be on Veda base, they examine their statements, and even their founder, Rupa Vilas, a few years ago, he came and he wrote a letter to GBC. He was one of the first ones. So he said, when I came up with this theory, I thought that we don't have qualified devotees to act as gurus. But he says, now 10 years or 15 years passed, and I can see that there are many qualified disciples of Srila Prabhupada who are absolutely qualified to be gurus. So therefore, I withdraw my my position. So their founder, that's his letter.
Is he saying the word in the Lotus Seven
Disciples? Yes. He was the founder of this Vedic village. And yes. All right. So thank you very much. I've kept you...